Everybody ready over here? Morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order the February 7th, 2013 session of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Good morning to everyone. I want to thank in advance all of the folks that were going to be sharing their comments with us today. Just kind of recapping some of the things that we heard the last time. I think sustainability could be viewed as a means by which we can have our cake and eat it too. And as Oregonians, I think we can probably plot that pathway better than anyone else. We heard about the importance of the economic, social, and environmental components of sustainability. We heard that scale is always important. The infrastructure and the maintenance of that infrastructure is critical. The wise management of our natural resources brings a host of values. And I think one of the examples that we heard there was that a healthy, sustainable forest brings not only recreational values, but things like clean water as well. We heard about the importance of science and factually based evidence. And last but not least, while maybe no one spoke about it directly, I think we heard over and over and over again how much the people who use our resources are the folks who love those resources and the first to step up to protect them. With that, I want to thank all of our friends from agriculture, mining, water, the outdoor community, and the conservation community for your input here today. And with that, I would like to call forward our first panel, Lisa Hansen from the Department of Agriculture, Jeff Stone from the Nurserymen, and Roger Beyer from the Seed Council. We're in advance, like I had to warn everyone the last time, we have a cast of thousands today, once again, and we would very much appreciate a three-minute statement. What do you do? How do you help improve sustainability in this state, and what are some of the key issues that you think that our committee could be helpful in helping to improve resources and what you do here in the state? Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and Director Koba sends her regards. She will be back with us next week. She was in Washington, D.C. at a national directors meeting over the last week. I'm going to talk just briefly about what we do at the Department of Agriculture, and then let your other panelists talk about the industry in general. So if there's one word to describe what we do in the Oregon Department of Agriculture, it's diverse. It's the same diversity that's represented in Oregon agriculture in size, scale, scope, and the types of crops. We have over 42 programs in our agency that represent the different sectors of agriculture that we work with. We have a threefold mission, with the first priority for us to provide food safety and consumer protection. And within that programmatic area, we have our food safety program. We inspect all facets of the food chain except restaurants. So if it involves food, there's a presence with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We also have all of our animal health programs, our laboratory program, and our weights and measures program. And in our weights and measures program, we assure that when you purchase a gallon of gas, you get a gallon of gas, and we weigh the lottery balls to make sure they're equal weight. In the second programmatic area that I would talk to is our natural resource program area. We have a responsibility to protect Oregon's natural resources. A program that you will likely hear about during this session is our agricultural water quality program. In Oregon, multiple agencies have responsibility for meeting the state water quality standards. the Department of Agriculture carries out that responsibility in working with the agricultural industry in Oregon. In addition, we have our insect pest prevention and management program to assure we can keep invasive pests out of the state, and if we find them, we use early detection and rapid response to try and eliminate them. We have the confined animal feeding program, as well as we regulate the use of pesticides and fertilizers. And then finally, the third fold of our mission is to promote market development and access for agriculture. And within this area, we have many of our fee-for-service programs. These are voluntary programs, such as our certification programs. We certify for the National Organic Program, Good Agricultural Practices, as well as Global GAP practices. And so there's just a wide variety of services provided there. And then most notably would be our Ag Marketing and Development Program, in which we work in all areas of the market, local, domestic and international. It's important to remember that 80% of what we produce in Oregon from agriculture leaves this state. Half of that goes overseas. And so maintaining those markets is incredibly important. I would note for all of you that one of the big accomplishments we've had in the last couple of years, and it took many years to get there, Oregon was the first state in the nation to be able to ship fresh blueberries to South Korea. The first loads went in 2012, and we're looking forward to accessing that market into the future. Blueberries are incredibly popular in Asia, and that was many years of work, building relationships, working through pest and disease issues to assure that the product is safe, as well as developing those markets. And with that, I will stop and hand it over to one of my colleagues.
Thank you very, very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Jeff Stone. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. You have extensive remarks that I have provided you, but just a quick down and dirty about your largest sector of agriculture. We were caught in the same downdraft as the economy. We went from $1 billion a few years ago down to we took about 40% haircut, down about $600 million. Now we're back up to about $775 million. They're starting to see recovery in the nursery industry as housing starts and consumer confidence recover. We ship 75% of our product out of the state, 50% east of the Mississippi. So if you look at the geographic imprint that the nursery and greenhouse industry has on the nation, it is significant. If you want to know, we have 54,000 acres in production. That's not actually a lot. It's very productive acres. But that is the most acres in production for nursery in the country of any state. We're the second largest state in the country for nursery production. California is number one. They're number one in everything that they choose to be. And so we also have very core issues that will be present to your committee. Water is a big issue for the nursery and greenhouse industry. We are predominantly a Willamette Valley-based industry, so if you think of us from Boring down past Eugene, that is really the breadbasket of the nursery and greenhouse industry. I would even submit that we do have growers in Representative Escobar's district, just about six. So it's not, I mean, we don't want to exclude you, Representative Escobar. But the breadbasket is right in that wheelhouse. Labor supply is a big deal for us. The ability to, and also transportation to get our products to market, are all three that are interwoven to one another. And one thing that you will be talking about as the policy committee for Ag is our unwavering support for natural resource agencies in this state. We commend Governor Kitzhaber in reversing the disinvestment in natural resource agencies, particularly into the Oregon Department of Agriculture, who is a true partner with the nursery and greenhouse industry, with the Water Resources Department and Department of Environmental Quality. All those three need to be adequately funded. So for us, you asked us what our big three were. Those were our big three, and I welcome this time to be with you this morning. How's that for fast?
That was excellent. You can tell the ones who have experience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here again today. I appreciate the opportunity to be back for two different segments of your introductions. I've handed out a packet to you, and you asked me to be here representing the Oregon Seed Council, which I'm very proud to do. I also, in the packet, included my other agricultural clients, which is the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association and the Oregon Blueberry Commission. I want to make sure that you didn't leave without at least making a plug for those two. I would like to add to what Deputy Director Hansen said about the blueberry industry. She mentioned the 2012 shipping of fresh blueberries into Korea. She said it's the only state allowed to do that. I would like to amend that by saying not only the only state, but the only nation in the world, only entity in the world that has been allowed to ship fresh blueberries into South Korea is Oregon. So that was a big coup for that industry.
Absolutely.
As my message will be today, just like it was the other day, I reminded you about the that use science and facts to base your decisions. Be an advocate for the industries in the legislature on all natural resource issues. Don't not just the issues that come before your committee, but any issue dealing with natural resources to come before the House. You be the sounding board. You be the eyes and ears. You be the matrix, the decision makers on those issues. I would also like to remind you that I mentioned on Tuesday of the recent reports, ag and forestry reports that have come out that show a pretty positive thing for the last year in both ag and forestry sectors. Specifically in the ag sector, I would like to remind you that the baseline starting point of that was really bad. So where the percentage growth may look good for the last 12 months, remember what the starting point was. You just heard from the nursery sector, they had a 40% reduction in about 2008-2009. The grass seed industry was down the same, 40%. The dairy industry is still struggling today because of the recession. So while we are rebounding, it's a rebound from a very low point. So remember that as you look at items and use those as a matrix. The one thing in the grass seed industry, there are a couple things I'd like to point out about Oregon's grass seed industry. We are currently the sixth largest commodity in the state. We have been as high as three and as low as, I don't know, before my time, but in the recent past, as sixth is as low as we've been. We encompass currently about 420,000 acres of Oregon's agricultural land. Most of that, about 95% of that, is in the Willamette Valley. I want you to think about the Willamette Valley in its entirety, and of the 220 odd crops that we grow in Oregon, grass seed is equal in acreage to all the rest of them combined. Now I want you to think about that picture for a moment. There are 200 and roughly 19 other crops that compose about 500,000 acres, and grass seed has about 500,000 acres. So while we may not be the highest in volume, we are clear, in dollars, we are clearly the highest in volume and in acreage. And the impact that has, grass is the great healer of the environment. And what we do, what my growers do with their grass is incredible for the environment. It filters air, it filters water, it improves soil quality, quantity, and all matters of soil. So as that's the picture I want to leave you with of Oregon grass seed industry. It is the Willamette Valley. If you drive from I-5 from basically starting in Wilsonville to Eugene, the picture of what you see on both sides of you as you drive down the freeway is grass. And just you need to keep that in perspective as you go to your duck and beaver games in the fall. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you all very, very much. Roger, I just want you to know not all those blueberries got away to South Korea. Before I even turned the heat up in the house this morning, I had a glass of blueberry juice. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. If you notice on the blueberry page, 4.2 million pounds were sold via on-farm sales in Oregon. So.
Yes, Vice Chair Esquivel.
A couple things. First of all, Mr. Chair, I would like the Department of Ag and ourselves to have a follow-up on invasive species because that scares me to death of what's going on in other states and what's coming toward this state, and it could have such a detrimental effect to our ecosystem that it's staggering. So we need to figure out a better mousetrap in order to circumvent that. As for the grass capital of the world, I thought we were, but it was medical marijuana. It was my...
I went out on 20 minutes and found 30 grow sites in a helicopter.
Multiple values, Vice Chair Esquivel. So thank you all very, very much. Committee members, we're going to be hearing from a lot of our friends throughout the session. I think this will be home for many of them, and we will have an opportunity to ask many of our friends more in-depth questions after today. I recognize that you may have a burning question. If you do, I'm going to leave it up to your discretion to raise your hand. If it's something that can wait until our friends return, it would be much appreciated so that we can get through our entire agenda today. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Tom Barrows from Three Mile Canyon, Jenna Jarvis from the Wheat Growers, and Katie Fast from, of course, the Farm Bureau. Welcome to each of you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tom Barrows, representing Three Mile Canyon Farms, which is a potato and dairy farm sitting on 93,000 acres about 10 miles west of Boardman, Oregon. Included on those 93,000 acres are 37,000 acres of irrigated land, primarily potato farm, and dairies that milk 24,000 cows twice a day. Has about a $420 million annual impact on Morrow and Gillum counties. You had asked about sustainability. I think this is a prime example of sustainability. The business model for the farm is a closed loop where crops we grow feed the cows that produce milk that goes to create Tillamook cheese. The manure the cows produce is captured and converted to environmentally beneficial soil additive and energy. And then the potatoes that we grow also are now finding their way to the international marketplace with a new joint venture with a Japanese company. We work closely with state agencies to be sure that state policies on air quality, water protection, labor relations, and energy production are all put into practice, and we're committed to continuing that. Also on the farm is a 23,000-acre conservation area that's managed by the Nature Conservancy on the south end of the land. We also work with a number of other groups. The general manager of the farm, Marty Myers, chairs the Oregon Business Association Committee dealing with the wise use of Columbia River water. If any of you would like to have more information, we're happy to come by and talk to you in your office.
Thank you very, very much, Tom.
Good morning. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. The Oregon Farm Bureau is Oregon's largest general agricultural organization. We represent farmers and ranchers from across the state, from every corner. And I have to stress, these are family operations and family ownerships. They grow a multitude of crops and share the diversity that Lisa Hansen talked about of Oregon agriculture. And they are doing that through a multitude of different practices: conventional, sustainable, organic, certified, and other niches. They also are marketing their crops in many different ways. Wholesale through direct sales to shippers and processors, through direct contracts to grow crops, through member-owned co-ops, roadside stands, farmers markets, and other value-added opportunities. At the Farm Bureau, we believe there's probably four critical pieces that we need for Oregon agriculture to be successful. The building block, a solid land base and land use program that protects Oregon agricultural's land. Water, which is the lifeblood of Oregon agriculture and helps bring the added value to our crops. And we are very excited about the water development fund that's in the governor's budget. Expect to have a lot more discussion around water and water use for not only agriculture but economic development as the session moves forward. A labor base is another important piece that Jeff Stone touched on. That is Oregon agriculture's number one expense is labor. And to be able to do the high-value crops and the diversified number of crops that we have in Oregon, hand-picked labor is a very critical piece. And also protection of our production practices. The diversity of farming needs a multitude of different tools to be able to raise crops. And it's very important to have those options available for folks no matter what type of operation they're running. And in that, I would say the right to farm and forest is an inherent piece of Oregon agriculture. Sometimes what we do is a little smelly, a little dirty, and a little noisy, and that protects people's practice rights. And finally, I'd like to hit on the importance of OSU statewides, the Extension Service, the Ag Experiment Station, and the Forest Research Lab, and the added value that that brings, not just, I think, to the farming community, but to all Oregonians. And with that, I enjoy working with you guys this session.
Thank you so very, very much, Katie.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jana Jarvis here representing today the Oregon Wheat Growers League and the Oregon Wheat Commission. I'll give you a 30-second history lesson in these two organizations. The Wheat Growers League was formed in 1926 when a group of growers and millers and bankers and agency personnel came together to talk about how to support the wheat industry in this state. And they set up a formal organization and charged themselves a dollar a year to be a part of that. You fast forward about 21 years to 1947. You think about what's going on in the country at that point in time, and they were looking at different economic marketing opportunities outside this country, and they decided they needed more stable source of funding, so they formed the first commodity commission in the United States, the Oregon Wheat Commission, in 1947. Charged themselves, self-assessed, a half a cent per bushel, and went off to develop trade teams and start building those relationships abroad. Today, the Oregon Wheat Commission assesses themselves 5 cents a bushel. And they focus on two primary things. They focus on, again, the marketing, both the trade teams. They help support the Wheat Marketing Center down at Albers Mill in downtown Portland, which I would invite all of you to take the time to tour. It's a very interesting tour. And they also focus on research. They partner with Oregon State to develop different wheat varieties here in the state. Today, the Oregon Wheat Growers League, while they focus on marketing and research, the league focuses on industry education and advocacy. So wheat is the primary grain grown here in the state. There are generally about 50 to 70 million bushels produced annually. Actually, last year there were 73 million, so it was a very good year. To give you a perspective, one bushel of wheat produces 42 pounds of flour, so you do the math. While we think of wheat as generally a product, a commodity that's grown in eastern Oregon, it's actually grown in 22 of Oregon's 36 counties. And it ranks either fourth or fifth as one of the top agricultural commodities produced in this state. 90% of wheat grown in Oregon is soft white wheat that's used to make cakes and pastries and flatbreads and things like that, and 90% of our wheat is exported, which means that it's exported largely through the Port of Portland. And just to give you some additional information, the Port of Portland exports 40% of this nation's wheat for a value of about $4 billion a year. So it's a big commodity moving out of Oregon. Issues, we will be bringing forward to you in a couple of weeks a little housekeeping bill with some issues that arose when we folded the Grains Commission into the Wheat Commission a couple of years ago, and I'll talk to you about that then. We are, as Katie mentioned, also concerned about issues surrounding the right to farm and forest, preemptions and bans on pesticides, commodities, canola, GMOs, things like that. We're going to be watching issues surrounding water, both quality and quantity. And just to give you a little perspective, if wheat grown on dry land, production is about 40 or 50 bushels an acre every other year. If you add water, you can grow about 150 bushels an acre. So water adds a tremendous value to the land. We are also concerned about research funding with the statewides. The Wheat Commission last year put in over $1 million to help supplement that fund. We've had some good years with wheat, but you know that ongoing commitment is unknown at this point in time, so we're very concerned about your general fund support for the statewides and research. The growers also paid an additional $1 million. Off of royalties. And lastly, we're concerned about issues with the Port of Portland, labor issues, access issues, and interestingly enough, the I-5 bridge. Not that we move wheat over it, but we move a lot of wheat under it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your comments and look forward to visiting with you throughout the session. Thank you very, very much. Next panel, please, will be Scott Dahlman, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, Ray Bartholomew, the Wine Growers Association, and Ivan Molesky, Friends of Family Farmers. Good morning to each of you.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me here today. My name is Scott Dahlman. I'm the Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I may be a new face to many of you. Many of you probably knew my predecessor, Terry Witt. He retired last January and I took over. Although I may be a new face to you, we won't be completely new to you. Paulette Pyle, my grassroots director, is somebody I'm sure you are all familiar with who's sitting back there. She's been representing OFS members for over 30 years around this capital. And we'll continue to do so this year, so there will be some familiarity for you. For those of you that aren't familiar with OFS, we are a grassroots coalition made up of agriculture, forestry, and other urban chemical users, which can be anybody from urban pest control to utilities who spray right-of-ways to golf courses who maintain their golf courses. So we have a wide breadth of membership, which means that I'm proud to say we have members in every single legislative district in the state, not just in the rural areas. So that's important to note. We do advocate on a variety of natural resource issues, but our focus is primarily on issues involving pesticides, fertilizer, and biotechnology. So that's really our focus. For this year, our legislative priorities, first and foremost, I do have to back up what some of my colleagues have said about the funding for the natural resource agencies and the statewide with OSU Extension, et cetera. That's very important to our membership, and to have that research and that expertise and that regulatory structure is extremely important for our issues. We are also going to be working to protect some current laws that we have against some challenges that might come up. First and foremost, the right to farm and forest. You've heard that brought up several times. That offers some very important protections for our members to be able to run their natural resource businesses both on the ag side and the forestry side. The pesticide preemption law, which has pesticides regulated at the state and federal levels, not by local municipalities, that enables a regulatory structure that's set up by the agencies that have the proper expertise on it, and it's important to keep that there. And the current integrated pest management statute, we think, is an effective statute for state agencies, and that it lays out a good way to address pest problems when they do arise, and we would like to keep the current language there instead of adding further restrictions. Finally, we will be pushing one bill this year, and it's termed a seed preemption law, and what it would do is similar to the pesticide preemption law, is it would have biotech crops regulated at the state or federal levels where the expertise lies instead of in municipalities. Proud to say Rep. Escobar will be sponsoring that for us, as he's had some biotech-related issues down in his district recently, and we think it'd be a good step forward. So with that, before I end my time here, I do want to make sure that you guys are invited. We're having a Farm and Forest 101. Many of the groups who spoke today will make sure you get a copy of this invitation if you haven't got it yet. Next Wednesday morning, it's going to be a breakfast where you can learn a little more in depth about some of the issues that agriculture and forestry are facing. So with that, I want to thank you for your time, and I look forward to working with all of you this year.
Thank you very, very much, and a great introduction.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lee Bartholomew, president of the Oregon Wine Growers Association, and as my day job, vineyard manager at Archery Summit Winery in the Willamette Valley and owner of a winery and vineyard out in the Columbia Gorge. So I'm here to talk to you today a little bit about wine growing in Oregon. The Oregon Wine Growers Association represents wineries and vineyards from eastern Oregon through the Willamette Valley and down into southern Oregon, touching in central Oregon a little bit as well, and growing rapidly. In 2011, we looked at economic activity in Oregon that was from the wine industry, and it totaled more than $2.7 billion. That doubled from 2005 when we did the same research. We represent wineries, as I said, from around the state, which total more than 400 wineries and 800 vineyards and over 20,000 acres of vineyards. So a much smaller number of acres when compared to grass seed in particular, but growing very rapidly in a large economic input into the state. So a couple of issues that are important for us this coming year. Land use is a very important issue for us, and in 2011 you passed legislation that had a few sunsets, so we're working through those sunsets right now, making sure that it works for everyone and finding good consensus around that right now. Workforce. It's very important to us to have a very stable workforce, and so we're working through some of the issues surrounding that, most importantly on a work group with the governor surrounding the driver's license issues. So we're working through that, and that's a very important issue to us right now. Research and education. As we continue to grow so rapidly, it's very important that we maintain high quality at all times. We're exporting a lot of our wine, both throughout the United States and overseas, and it's important to maintain the high quality image that Oregon currently has, and we see this being very important through research. So we fund through ourselves self-imposed taxes a lot of research, and looking toward Oregon State University's fermentation science research program, but they're looking for $2.5 billion to million dollars. Billion would be nice.
So
yeah,
we're the same amount.
Looking at fermentation sciences, so not just wine, but wine, cheese, beer, distillation products as well. And then an ongoing concern and going forward is the issue of spray drift. So we don't want to tackle that this legislative session, but look forward to working with many of our counterparts here after this session on spray drift issues and right to farm.
Very good.
Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you so very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Ivan Maluski, I'm the policy director for Friends of Family Farmers based in Molalla, Oregon. Since 2005, Friends of Family Farmers has worked to promote and protect socially and environmentally responsible family-scale agriculture in Oregon and to support citizens working to shape healthy rural and urban communities. We work with a wide array of independent family farms, local food advocates, and concerned citizens to foster an approach to agriculture that sustains local communities, respects the land, treats animals humanely, and provides a viable livelihood. We support policies that help create and sustain local economies rooted in family-scale agriculture and that protect and expand the ability of Oregon's family farmers to run successful businesses and provide safe and nutritious food. We run, to my knowledge, the state's only land link service, which helps connect newer farmers with folks who are looking to get out of the business to make sure that land can stay in farm ownership. We've made numerous connections through that service. We're also the local affiliate of the National Young Farmers Coalition. Our guiding policy document is the Agricultural Reclamation Act, which I've made available to you here today. This was developed through meetings and listening sessions with over 300 small farmers and ranchers across the state. It identifies challenges faced by many who grow and produce food in the state and contains a list of policy priorities that deal with a wide array of issues from meat and poultry to milk and dairy, food safety, regional food system infrastructure and markets, access to capital and land, new and young farmers, and more. During the 2011 session, as some of you may remember, we worked to pass legislation to align state law with federal rules to allow small poultry processors to slaughter and sell up to 1,000 of their own birds per year on their own property direct to consumers. And we worked to pass a Farm Direct bill, which helped clarify rules to allow for processing of up to $20,000 worth of low-hazard, minimally processed foods in home kitchens for sale in farmers' markets. In both cases, a key goal was to help create new economic opportunities and regulatory certainty for small family farms in rural Oregon. Our priorities this session share that same basic goal. This year, we're working to pass House Bill 2700, which would create a beginning and expanding farmer loan program, also known as Aggie Bonds, which Representatives Clem and Esquivel have graciously are the co-lead sponsors on. This program would assist beginning farmers with acquisition of agricultural land, improvements, and depreciable agricultural property. We're also continuing to work on the poultry issue with legislation that ensures that small poultry producers operating under that 1,000-bird exemption do not face inconsistent regulations across the state and the potential of high permitting fees, and that bill is under discussion in the Land Use Committee. Both of these bills are also priorities of the Oregon Growers Partnership, which is a coalition of small farm, local food, and rural economic development interests across the state. Lastly, we do believe the legislature should provide direction to the Oregon Department of Agriculture this year on the issue of canola in the Willamette Valley. Due to the great uncertainty created by the agency with abrupt rule changes to the Willamette Valley Protection Protected District proposed this past summer, which could go into effect in the coming months. Our farmers who make a living in the specialty seed production industry and in growing and marketing fresh vegetables have significant concerns over the future of their industries should we lift the current ban on canola in the Willamette Valley. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and we look forward to talking with you all about these and other bills. Thank you.
Thank you all very, very much. Greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for all the value added that you provide for our state. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Andrea Durbin and Jason Miner, Oregon Environmental Council and 1,000 Friends, respectively. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Andrea Durbin. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Environmental Council. Chair Witt, members of the committee. For those of you that are not familiar with Oregon Environmental Council, we're one of the oldest statewide environmental groups in Oregon. We've been active on policy matters in the legislature since 1968. We are a nonpartisan organization committed to working collaboratively to finding environmental solutions. And our strategic approach includes focusing on a healthy environment, a healthy economy, and enhancing social equity in Oregon. And, for example, we've done that in a number of ways, including working with the Oregon nursery industry to help the nursery industry adopt climate-friendly practices to reduce their energy usage and save costs. We've worked with cranberry growers in the South Coast to help them develop become sustainably certified, develop a local regional brand, and help connect them to buyers so that they have a higher value for their product. We've worked, we understand the need for local capacity to support farmers in conservation, and to that end, we've collaborated with the agricultural community to increase funding for soil and water conservation districts, watershed councils, and to add back funding for OSU Extension agricultural experiment stations and the Forest Research Laboratory. This will be a high priority again for us this year, as you've heard from other speakers, to make sure that there's adequate and sufficient funding for the statewides. Similarly, fully funding natural resource agencies is a high priority for our organization. Natural resource activities are a major economic driver for Oregon, representing 37% of our GDP, so it's as much as an environmental priority and strategy as it is an economic priority. And so we look forward to working with you on increasing funding for the natural resource agencies. Looking ahead at issues, we'd like to see the committee take a balanced approach to managing our precious water resources. This means ensuring adequate water supplies to support a strong economy while also using our water more efficiently, protecting water quality, and ensuring enough is left in stream to provide fish and wildlife habitat. OEC, our conservation partners, and water users have been working hard to find common ground on water issues, and we hope that this committee will support those collaborative efforts, which includes implementing the Integrated Water Resource Strategy. And we'd also like to draw attention to our support of local collaborative solutions to addressing environmental issues on the ground, such as the pesticide stewardship partnerships. That is why we support the governor's $1.5 million proposed budget package to provide state funding for community-led pesticide stewardship partnerships, which is, we think, is an important strategy for improving water quality in Oregon. These partnerships work effectively because they are community-driven, they are problem-driven, and they are cost-effective and outcome-effective. And we've seen tremendous impact in counties like Hood County and Umatilla, where these partnerships have led to the decline of pesticides by as much as 90% in a very short amount of time with much fewer resources invested. And so we encourage you to take a look at that program as well. We really look forward to working with all of you this session and appreciate being here today. Thank you.
Andrea, thank you so very, very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Jason Miner. I'm the Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Oregon, an organization I've had the honor to lead for 3 years. Governor Tom McCall said that heroes are not statues painted against a red sky. They are people who take responsibility for their community. And I'd like to thank 1,000 Friends. We work with Oregon's everyday heroes to defend farm and forest land and help prevent urban sprawl onto that farm and forest land. It's really a two sides of the same coin. If we work inside our urban growth boundaries to make the best, most efficient use of urban land, we do the best work we can to prevent it from sprawling onto farm and forest lands. We are an advocacy, education, and outreach organization. Accomplish our objectives through those means. We have an office in Grants Pass, an office in Eugene, an office in Bend and an office in Portland. We're 37 years old, so I guess we don't date quite back to 1968, but we can go back to 1975. And since 1975, we've been advocating for Oregon's land use planning program. Specifically this session, I think, you know, everybody should be aware of Goal 1, citizen participation in the program, Goal 3 and 4, the protection of agriculture and farm and forest land, and the urbanization goals. I know that those are all things that have been part of the governor's program and the governor's work program for this year, and things that we'll see in legislation. I think that it's definitive proof that the program's been successful, that we have a lower rate of farmland loss than our neighbors, Washington and California. I was mentioned that California leads in everything that they want to lead in, so I guess they want to lead in that. Proud to say that we are not a leader in that. Also, we have about a tenth of the rate of conversion of forest land as our neighbor to the north, Washington. So successfully keeping land and farm and forest land helps underpin that second biggest element of our economy, agriculture, which has been talked about a lot today. Our priorities for this legislative session, EFU zoning, exclusive farm use zoning, was originally exclusive. We all know that over the past 40 years of land use planning, that's become more and more inclusive with many, many non-farm uses creeping into EFU definition. We'd like to continue to see efforts to narrow that definition to keep EFU land, some of the world's best farmland, in farming. Similarly, there's a allowable use on farmland of private parks, a sort of broad, broadly defined exception that we'd like to see narrowed so that things like raves, motorboat races, stock car races can't occur on farmland, not an appropriate use, again, for some of the best farmland in the world. And lastly, I think one of the questions to witnesses was how would you advise the committee to look at natural resource issues, and I like to keep in mind that it's particularly in forest issues which will arise this session, that it's been private forestry that's really kept mills running in this state for at least the past 10 years. That's where the wood has been coming from. And we have a basis of private forest land because of the land use planning program. It keeps land in large acreages that are manageable in private forestry, and that's really been the bread and butter of one of our economic backbones. And so as we discuss forestry, I like to think that, you know, part of our ability to fight fires effectively in this state and part of our ability to manage private land effectively is due to large parcel size, which prevents rural residential sprawl and enables us to focus on the resource aspect of forest land. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you both very, very much for your testimony, for everything that you do, and we hope to hear from you throughout the session.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, we're going to shift gears a little bit from agriculture to mining, and I would like to call up first, please, Vicki McConnell, our state geologist. Is Mary Abrams here? And Mary Abrams, director of Department of State Lands. Good morning. And Tom Cantell, Eastern Oregon Mining Association. Thank you very, very much, each of you. Welcome to our committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Witt and committee members. For the record, my name is Vicki McConnell, and I am the Oregon State Geologist, and I have the honor of directing the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And I'll start with a geology lesson. It's all about the rocks, and it's all about the landforms. Everything that you have heard discussed so far, the great bounty of the Willamette Valley, the water, the rocks, everything, it's all there because of our geology and our mountains and the way that we are formed both in the past and as we go into the future. So one of the big responsibilities that we have for the state is in our Geologic Survey and Services Program. That program covers the creation, compilation, monitoring, and information dissemination on the geology and the geosciences of the state. And believe it or not, you use that information all the time, whether you are looking at what the soil, how soil types affect your agriculture, whether you have forestry, whether there are extractive minerals that you may be interested in for the mining industry, whether there are hazards, geologic hazards, that you may want to be avoiding. All of that information starts with the science that we provide for the state and have been providing since 1937. So that's our science part of our responsibility. We also have the responsibility to, we also do mineral assessments, resource assessments, and that could be anything like geothermal, looking at, we have a great geothermal potential for the state. That's one of the renewable energies that has been recognized and is very, very useful. We also have a responsibility for regulating the mineral extractive industry, both if you're looking at surface mining, which is primarily aggregate, sand, and gravel. That has an industry in the state right now that's about a $300 million industry at the mine site, and also creates those general foundational materials that you need for construction and development. You don't have concrete and asphalt if you don't have the rocks and the sand. So our responsibility is to regulate for the mining industry for proper operation to mitigate and decrease any off-site impact, and for the secondary beneficial reclamation of whatever at the end of the mining time. We also hold the security bonds and money to ensure that reclamation will take place at the end of the mining activity. So we regulate for what's called surface mining. That's about 900 permitted sites around the state right now. We regulate for the exploration and development of oil and gas and geothermal drilling in the state, and we do have that occurs. I would like to mention that we actually have the first commercial geothermal operation in the state that started operating in Malheur County in last November. So that's a first for us. And we also regulate for metal mining, extractive metal mining, which would be whether you're doing flotation or chemical process. So that's hard rock mining as opposed to aggregate or placer type mining. We do that through a very field-based oriented group, programs. We get people out there, they do the inspections, and they make sure that people are operating and reclaiming properly. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Vicki. Director Abrams.
Hello, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Abrams, and I'm here as the director of the Department of State Lands. I am the new director, and so I ask your patience because I have much less experience than my predecessor, Louise Soliday, who many of you have worked with. I do have in the room with me my assistant director, Bill Ryan, for Wetlands and Waterways, in case there are any questions that I'm unable to answer. The Department of State Lands was established in 1878 and manages the land and other resources that are dedicated to the Common School Fund. The Common School Fund trust lands were given to the state at statehood to provide funding for Oregon schools, and the department takes this trustee role very seriously. The department's mission is to ensure a legacy for Oregonians and their public schools through sound stewardship of lands, wetlands, waterways, unclaimed property, estates, and the Common School Fund. So as you can see, the department works in a number of arenas. In addition to our initial charge to manage the state lands given its statehood, we have been tasked by the state to implement several other programs. In 1957, the Unclaimed Property Program was added to the department's tasks. We were asked to safeguard financial assets until they could be reclaimed by their rightful owners. In 1967, the department was assigned the state's Removal Fill Program, which is much of the legislation that you're interested in this committee, to protect Oregon's waterways and wetlands for navigation, fisheries, commerce, and recreation. In 1974, the department was asked to be the state partner for the National Estuarine Research Reserve Program, which is our South Slough Reserve down in Coos Bay area. And in 1989, finally, the department was assigned the Wetlands Conservation Program. At this point in time, the department has just over $1 billion in market value in the Common School Fund. We distribute right around $50 million of that each year to the Oregon schools. We manage about 750,000 acres of forest and range land and about 1.3 million acres of waterways. The department issues somewhere around 7,500 permits and proprietary authorizations per year. And we also handle about $48 million in unclaimed property, half of which, more or less, we return to about 20,000 owners per year. The department has 106 employees and a biennial budget of about $38 million. One of the state lands, the Department of State Lands priorities for this session is continuing to improve our removal fill mitigation opportunities for people who are doing work in the state's wetlands and waterways. Under current statute, the cost of removal fill mitigation credits is calculated on a statewide basis. This overcharges credits in rural areas where land and construction costs are lower than the statewide average, while undercharging credits in urban areas where costs are higher. House Bill 2032 proposes changes to statute that would enable the department to charge either the actual cost of the mitigation or, if the actual cost is not known, an estimate based on a regional rather than a statewide average. This should make mitigation costs for removal fill actions more equitable across the state. I'd like to thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you so very, very much. Appreciate your statement and everything you do on behalf of our state and its citizens. Good morning, Tom. I think you've probably traveled a considerable distance this morning.
Chair Witt and members of the committee, I'm actually a Salem resident of 72 years, and I think you probably have me mixed up maybe with Tom Kitcher, who actually is down South Cave Junction. You know, I've been placer miner, I guess, for over 30 years, and I have my own gold claims in Southern Oregon. I'm director of government affairs for Willamette Valley Miners and kind of an associate director for about 5,000 miners in Oregon. There's many associations that throughout the state, and I'm going to try to stay with your game plan here with how economically, environmentally, and all that affects us. Combined on the economic side, Oregon and out-of-state miners, revenue that's brought in is about $10 million, and that's probably conservative. And examples of that is your RV parks for the folks that usually come in or travel south and east. They buy gas, food, lodging, all kinds of things, which helps Oregon's economy considerably. We, on the environmental side, placer miners are probably using the most efficient equipment now that's available to recover valuable minerals in Oregon streams. We probably remove, I don't know what the total count is. I know just one situation a year or two ago, DEQ came down and picked up over 10 pounds of mercury that was recovered with the gold dredges that we use. And I would guess we're talking hundreds of pounds of lead that fishermen, you know, leave when they fish for steelhead, salmon, and so forth in our streams. So we feel environmentally we're probably picking up a lot of the trash and everything that's left in the stream. That includes car parts. I mean, it's amazing what you find in the streams. And our social impacts includes helping new miners educate themselves on best management practices, so they're not money into banks and all of that kind of thing. As far as what the House Agriculture Natural Resource Committee could do to help us, we probably are seeing some of the more restrictive, I'd I'd say, regulations and permits, and it's getting more so every year. And we're hoping that maybe some way, some of you folks will help reduce some of that for us. Our legislative goals this year, we have for 2013 some of the most anti-mining bills we've ever seen. It's just wanting to shut it down. Examples of that, of course, is we've got Senate Bill 115, which is, from what we read of that bill, it may allow up to a 4-inch nozzle to work in streams, and they're trying to define what is, I guess, commercial and what is mining. And under 1872 mining law, there is no definition for a nozzle, which is an issue we're kind of trying to resolve with some of the agencies. Senate bill, I think I'm not going to go into these Senate bills. I've left you some information with my testimony regarding some of the bills. 401 with the New Oregon Scenic Waters, I think there's 23 new streams or parts of reaches of existing Oregon Scenic Waters. There are currently about 19 Oregon Scenic Waters and one lake, Waldo Lake. Okay, and so bottom line on this thing is, if you look at some of the information I left you, I would appreciate any help you can give us, and also leave you a thought: what isn't mined is grown in this wonderful planet we live on, and we hope that we can continue to provide some of the minerals that this country so desperately needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very, very much. Appreciate your comments and testimony. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Phil Ward from the Water Resources Department, April Snell, and Mark Landauer from the Water Utilities and Special Districts. Good morning to each of you, and welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Phil Ward. I serve as the director of the Oregon Water Resources Department. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you all this morning.
Good morning.
The Water Resources Department is Oregon's water quantity agency. We're responsible for managing Oregon's water supply, both for economic and environmental purposes. So a challenging balance at times. We issue permits to use water to farmers, to cities, to industry, and we issue permits to protect stream flows for fish, recreation, and water quality. Oregon's economy, I think we all would recognize, is based on water use. And you've heard testimony to that effect earlier in the day. This is not the Midwest, where agriculture gets the benefit of growing season rainfall. We're dry in the growing season, and so we depend for our agricultural production on an adequate supply of water. Interestingly enough, this also relates, though, very much to other segments of our economy. Facebook, when they were considering coming to Prineville, had to be assured of a secure water supply to make that move, and that's something we work closely with that local community to effect. So water is definitely tied very closely to our to the economic health of our state. It's tied as well to the environmental health of our state. A healthy water resource, so much of the environmental values that we hold dear in this state depend on a healthy water resource. Obviously, water flow is necessary for fish and for water quality here in Oregon. And certainly Oregon's social and cultural values are wrapped up in the mystique that is Oregon's dynamic water resource. We consider ourselves a wet state here in Oregon. I think most of us would say that. But despite that, we are facing today significant water resource challenges both on the west and east sides of our state. Surface water is nearly fully allocated in this state in the summer months. That means if you come to us for a water use permit out of a stream or river during the summertime, there's a good chance you're not going to get it in this day and age. Groundwater declines have forced significant restrictions both in eastern and western Oregon on groundwater use.
And certainly one of the troubling things that we've looked at in recent years is the projections that if we do experience some of the climate change projections that are being put forward today could greatly impact our greatest water storage system in Oregon, the snowpack we receive in the Cascade Range. So all these things factor in to how we manage our water resource in the years ahead. 2009, this body gave our agency a charge to develop a modest document called the Integrated Water Resources Strategy. This charge, given to our agency and to the Departments of Environmental Quality, Fish and Wildlife, and Agriculture, was to take into account all of Oregon's water uses and needs and lay out a blueprint for how those were to be addressed in the years to come. We finished this first iteration of that document this last summer. The Water Resources Commission gaveled it into formal existence, and so we will be bringing you some specific recommendations that flow out of this plan for your consideration during this legislative session. Three agency bills, Mr. Chair and members, are filed with this committee, and so we hope we'll get to be seeing you soon for consideration of those pieces of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Director Ward. April, I neglected to recognize you as representing the Water Resources Congress when I called you up. Welcome to our committee this morning.
Thank you, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. For the record, April Snell, Executive Director with the Oregon Water Resources Congress. Our association was formed in 1912, so I think I beat out the other groups earlier. And we represent irrigation districts, water control districts, improvement districts, and other purveyors of agricultural water supplies. And our mission is to promote and protect the use of water rights and the wise stewardship of water resources. Our members are local government entities that are responsible for managing the waters within their district for the benefit of all the water users, which provide both food and fiber that are very essential to Oregon's economy and to the U.S. economy at large. Our members represent roughly one-third of the irrigated land in Oregon and range from serving 600 irrigated acres to those that serve almost 70,000. We are committed to seeking balanced solutions to ensure that our members have the tools to continue to deliver water to irrigated agriculture. And so as part of that, we have high priorities in seeking funding for water conservation, water supply, and water quality funding, both for our districts and their needs in maintaining their systems, and then in supporting the Natural Resource Agency, Water Resources Department, Department of Environmental Quality, U.S. Fish and, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Department of Agriculture to ensure that they have the services for our users that are dependent upon those. However, we want to make sure that that funding source is stable and equitable in all forms. We are supportive of the Integrated Water Resources Strategy that Phil mentioned and see a lot of potential coming out of the governor's recommended budget for implementing components of that strategy, including funding for water supply and conservation projects, and we're very excited to see what comes out of the governor's work group related to that effort. There's an estimated value for irrigated agriculture in Oregon of $3.2 billion. So our members are a part of ensuring that water is delivered to those entities that have that production value, and it's not an easy task. We have members on both the east and the west side, and they have a lot of challenges in making sure that they're continuing to deliver water. And I think we all have a shared responsibility to ensure that there's water for both our current and our future demands, and ensuring that both the rural and more urbanized areas have the water they need, and ensuring that there is food and fiber in Oregon and in the world at large. So I'm looking forward to hopefully meeting with all of you, and encourage you, if you have any questions, to contact me, and look forward to being before this committee again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, and we look forward to it as well.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. The Special Districts Association represents approximately 30 different types of special districts that are in statute under ORS 198. Those districts include ports, municipal water suppliers, irrigation districts, soil water conservation districts, wastewater districts, a panoply of districts, including, I might add, a weather control district. Haven't quite figured that one out yet, but nevertheless, we'll continue on. I'm here today in my role today as representing municipal water suppliers. Municipal water suppliers provide approximately drinking water for 88% of the state's population, or about 3.3 million people. Obviously, this water supply, potable water, is crucial to the health safety of our population, but it also serves as the backbone of our economy in more developed areas. For example, Intel, one of our largest private employers, is a huge consumer of water in the state, and so obviously has very large economic ramifications for our state. Our providers provide clean, reliable water to businesses, residences, schools, parks, hospitals, so you can imagine the impacts on what we like to call ESE, the environmental, social, economic umbrella, if you will. And our economic growth in the state largely relies on predictable and deliver a predictable supply of water, not only now, but in the future. I'll cut to the chase for municipal suppliers at the moment. Our biggest issue for this session and for several years to come will probably be focused on the Willamette River and the 1.6 million acre feet of water stored behind the federal, the Willamette Project. That project is comprised of 13 federal dams on the Willamette and its tributaries. Much of that water has not been reallocated. There needs to be a reallocation process as a result of the BIOP that was issued in 2008. And there are a number of cities, districts, environmental organizations, agricultural interests that all have a very big interest ensuring that that water will serve the Willamette Valley. As Director Ward had said, there is no more surface water available. However, that water will serve for the future needs of much of the Willamette Valley, and in order to get at that water, this state is going to have to come up with funding to match federal monies in order to reallocate that 1.64 million acre feet of water, not only for now, but for future generations of Oregonians. Thank you very much, and look forward to working with each of you during the session. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate all of your comments, and I'm very pleased that we're now able to control the weather here in the state. One quick one. Vice Chair Esquivel.
On our irrigation system, we have several lakes that are in chain, daisy chain together with our irrigation system through. But I guess it's my understanding that once we start from point A and end up into the where the water is needed, we lose 43% of that water. So therefore, it's up to us to figure out how to get that water down to where we're only losing a minute amount instead of almost half of it. So I think that's the real challenge. There's your surface water right there is being evaporated and or leaking off.
Very, very good. I'm certain that is one of a multitude of issues we're going to be hearing about more in terms of water. Thank you very, very much to each of you. With that, I'd like to call up Kurt Melcher,
Deputy Director of ODF&W, Al Elkins from Oregon Hunters Association, excuse me, and Jared Broadfoot from the Oregon Outdoor Council.
Familiar faces.
Yes.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee.
Welcome.
For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. As a Deputy Director, I serve as the agency's primary legislative coordinator, so I'm over here working with you all at your request. I'm happy to help with anything you might need during the session. So, and I'll be by to make appointments with each of you. I think I have some of them already scheduled. But nonetheless, I'll be brief, as I did also talk to you a little bit on Tuesday morning. The Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Fish and Wildlife Commission are responsible in statute to manage Oregon's fish and wildlife resources. We have a number of statutes that guide us, and the biggest overarching statutes that guide the commission are the wildlife policy and the food fish management policy, as well as a host of other statutes that serve to guide us. The commission and the department's mission is to preserve, protect, and enhance Oregon's fish and wildlife and their habitats for the use and enjoyment of present and future generations. We believe within the department that, and within the commission, that active management of Oregon's fish and wildlife populations is essential to achieve those goals. I want to talk a little bit again about economics, and I know I mentioned it on Tuesday, but I'm going to mention it again here today because it's equally as important on the hunting side as well as on the fishing side. But the economics surrounding fishing and hunting in Oregon are often overlooked, but based on recent studies done by the department, or actually done by consultants hired by the department and Travel Oregon, the state's tourism agency, in Oregon, fishers, hunters, shellfish harvesters, and wildlife viewers spend over $1 billion annually on travel-related expenses, just on travel-related expenses. We have the information now from this survey based on county, so we have county-specific data, and in many of Oregon's rural counties, the travel related to hunting and fishing represents the majority of the travel expenditures in that county. In addition to the travel-related expenditures, folks in Oregon spend approximately $1.5 billion on related equipment purchases. It's, and I know as you heard from the fishing folks, and you'll probably hear today from some of the hunting folks, while many of them are small businesses, it's big business in Oregon. And some of them are big businesses, as we met with some of them last night, in fact. So with that, Chair Witt, I will probably used up my 3 minutes, and I am happy to pass the microphone on here to Mr. Elkins.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Morning, Al.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. The Oregon Hunters Association is a 12,000-member association here based in Medford, Oregon. We have 27 chapters. In 2012, OHA invested more time and energy than ever before to benefit wildlife, hunters, and conservation in Oregon. Our members dedicated over 30,000 volunteer hours on local projects, putting $178,800 on the ground in Oregon. We also awarded $16,500 in grants to fund 4 wildlife habitat and management research projects. These projects included building mallard nesting ducts, installation of 2 guzzlers, and the funding of a mature buck migration study on the White River Wildlife Area. Just 2 examples of what we do through our local chapters. The Redmond chapter, for example, plows, plants, and fertilizes, and waters food and cover plots during the growing season to benefit local and wintering wildlife near Mitchell. And the Capital chapter and Midwell Valley chapters take part in hunter access projects on the west side of the Cascades, manning gates on private timberland that would otherwise be closed to drive-in access. In regards to the question about the Agriculture Committee, how can better serve our agriculture and natural resource interests, I think We all know we have a problem with predation and wildlife herds. We talk about that every session, and I think we need to look at it really hard this session again. We also need to look really hard at, we all know the wolves in Oregon. We know what we're dealing with now, a limited number, but we also need to look at what we're going to deal with when that limited number is not so much so and it's a greater number. So those two areas in predation we really need to study hard. Another area also is wildlife damage, what it does to timber, agriculture, all the groups. For the last 2 years, we've been meeting on a regular basis, monthly, agriculture interest, timber interest, grass seed industry, to look at what we can do to help Oregon deal with the wildlife damage program and those their programs. As Wildlife Services money is depleted, more and more counties are looking for resources to help with that problem. So that is something we really need to look at this session. And I know that there will be a bill that will be dealing with establishing a pilot project in three or four different counties around the state. So I suggest we have a predation day, if you will, and look at both sides of the coin. Another thing that's out there that we never talk about is poaching. And we need to get a handle on that. I know there are people that have a handle on that in the OSP, Wildlife Enforcement. We need to hear what their take is on that, and if we as any can do anything to help that. We give thousands and thousands of dollars, OHA, every year to the TIP program, which is turn-in poaching. And that's just one small part. Other organizations do as well. And I think that we really need to start talking about that. As far as our legislative goals for this session, we have the two number one goals that we carry forth each session, and that is to keep the current level of wildlife biologists in the state of Oregon. Wildlife is not in Salem, it's in the fields, and so we focus on the fields and the biologists that do the work to maintain the herds, to maintain all of that, natural resources. We also would like to, support keeping the level of officers in the OSP Wildlife Division. Those are our two main goals. We have a little topic that we always bring forth to this committee annually, and that is landowner preference program. We've had a series of meetings with all of the stakeholders in that. We're having our final meeting next Monday. We have some issues. We think we have a good solution, but we may need help from the committee in getting all parties to agree. So you'll be hearing more about that as the session moves on. We are going to work hard in trapping, in relation to the trapping issue and the anti-trapping bill that was dropped today, Senate Bill 494. We will work with our partners on defeating that. And just two general public, general interests that we have are public access. That's always an interest that is for us. And the sightings of wind energy, alternative wind energy windmills on certain portions of the state where we are concerned about when it comes to wildlife habitat, winter and summer ranges. That concludes my, I hope I didn't go over, that concludes my...
Thank you very, very much, Al. And we will be looking forward to hearing more. You had some very specific recommendations,
right,
with regard to predation, wildlife damage, poaching, and the landowner preference
right,
programs. We're going to look forward to hearing more from you, more in
okay,
depth on this.
Okay.
And Representative Krieger, did you have something specific here?
Well, they're talking about wildlife damage. You know, it kind of caught my eye because I've been dealing with the cormorants on fish, and I did have Roy Ellicker, the director, down to our tree farm some years ago, and Jim Myron. And our little 310 acres had $410,000 worth of damage from bears. So bears are not my favorite creature.
The figures that we're seeing just from the various interest groups, Mr. Chair, are just absolutely staggering. So
As Tree Farmer of the Year, you grow beer candy in the springtime? Is that what it
I think you need to relate that if you've got $410,000, we're talking about hundreds of millions statewide. Right. You know what that does to the common school fund as far as the money that comes in from taxes?
Exactly.
It affects the education. Right. We need to understand that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very, very much. And Jared?
My turn. Sorry,
your turn. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot. I'm the Vice President of the Oregon Outdoor Council. Let me first say that I am here as a hunter, a conservationist, and a sportsman. Those terms define who I am and have shaped my life. At the Oregon Outdoor Council, over the last 2 years, we have built one of the most impressive coalition of conservation organizations and outdoor manufacturers in the state has ever seen. Last night, we had a reception with a lot of those folks to get everyone together and talk policy. Currently, our list includes the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Oregon Chapter of the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, National Rifle Association, Oregon Firearms Federation, Mule Deer Foundation, Oregon Bow Hunters Association, Oregon Hunters Association, Oregon Trappers Association, Safari Club International, the National Assembly of Sportsmen's Caucuses, and the Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation. And our list continues to grow. From the manufacturers, we're proud to partner with Leupold Optics, Benchmade Knives, Lone Wolf Knives, Crimson Trace, Oregon Packworks, Bullseye Camera Systems, Hex Stealth Screen, Extreme Elk Magazine, Elk101.com, and Danner Boots. The list also continues. Along with our numerous partner organizations and companies, we have a membership. Collectively, all of our partners and organizations represent over 100,000 sportsmen in this state alone, and that's a pretty impressive figure. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has put it best: hunting is conservation. The money spent each year on tags and licenses goes directly to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to fund wildlife management. Without sportsmen and women, you have no fish and wildlife conservation, because without us, you have no funding. Each day, Oregon sportsmen and women spend $2.5 million. That's $2.5 million a day on hunting, fishing, trapping, shooting, and other activities. That's $1 billion each year. When the opportunity to hunt, fish, and trap is taken away, the money spent locally goes away with it. Without sportsmen and women, local economies suffer greatly. Last year alone, the economic impact of sportsmen and women on local economies and around the state was $1.6 billion. And that figure just came out of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, their study that they do every 5 years. The very backbone of fish and wildlife conservation is sportsmen and women, not anti-hunting groups who only seek to exploit species for financial gain or attempt to push their moral superiority on everyone else. Oregon has seen how dangerous ballot box biology can be, and hopefully we've learned that without sportsmen and women, fish and wildlife conservation will be a thing of the past. Just real quickly, we've got some legislation. The first piece is HJR 13, which would put on the ballot in 2014 a constitutional amendment to guarantee our right to hunt, fish, and trap. Though hunting, fishing, and trapping have long been a part of America's heritage, the right to hunt, fish, and trap has recently come into question by many anti-hunting organizations. In order to establish what we have assumed for centuries as a right, 17 states have already amended their constitution and guaranteed this right. That's one of our bills. The next one, and we talk a lot about predation. I got involved in the politics of wildlife management because of predation. We have House Bill 2624, which does not change the law on dogs and bait. It merely allows counties to have a local countywide vote and let voters decide at the local level whether they want the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to have those tools to manage cougar and bear populations. Again, it doesn't change the law, other than it allows counties to have the local option. Because at the end of the day, Wallowa County, Umatilla County, and the rural counties know how they want to deal with these predators. and the Department of Fish and Wildlife needs to retain the authority to do that, which that bill does. The last issue that we're working on is a requirement that anyone who gets appointed to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission should have to have purchased a hunting and or fishing license for 5 consecutive years prior to being appointed. The point there is if you don't hunt or fish, then we don't think you should serve on a commission who regulates hunting and fishing in Oregon. Pretty novel concept, we know. With that, I'll end my 3 minutes and would be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Thank you very, very much. Jared, you had a lot of information. I couldn't write quite quickly enough. You mentioned $1.6 billion. What was that figure pertaining to?
It's the economic, the ripple effect of sportsmen and their spending in Oregon is $1.6 billion, and that was last year. That was just last year, 2011. That report is forthcoming from us at the Oregon Outdoor Council and the Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation. We've partnered with them to get those documents out, and they're actually working on those right now. They sent me the prelim numbers, but U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was a little late getting that study out.
And one might logically assume that that was during a recession year and that that would be likely to
grow. Yeah, Chair Witt, absolutely.
Thank you very, very much. Yes, Vice Chair Esquivel.
We had last year, remember, we rolled around in the dirt on a survey system and a fine system. Prior to last year, or this year, we only had a 42 percentile of participation in the survey. I am pleased to announce not only are we going to save $250,000 on the survey by phone, but we have over, we estimate we're going to have over a 90% participation in the survey. So that's a step forward, and thanks a lot for that. And you two especially, we worked very, very hard on that. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Look forward to hearing more from you when we actually entertain specific bills. With that, I would like to switch gears once again and hear from some of our conservation community. I'd like to call forward, please, Steve Cafori, the Trust for Public Lands and Wildlife Society, Doug Moore from the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, and Sue Marshall, please, from the Audubon Society. Good morning to each of you, and welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're hopeful that if you can try and limit your testimony to as close to 3 minutes as is possible, it would be greatly appreciated. And I think we're going to be able to finish on time and on budget today. So thank you very much. Welcome. Please proceed.
Ladies first.
Thank you. Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Sue Marshall. I'm here today representing Audubon Society of Portland, and I'd also like to mention three of the Riverkeeper programs that I represent. I understand you'll be dealing with a few water bills in this committee. So Rogue Riverkeeper, Tualatin Riverkeepers, and Willamette Riverkeeper, Tualatin largely in Washington County. Collectively, their membership is nearly 20,000. Audubon, not that I want to be competitive, but Audubon was founded in 1902. So we believe today we are the oldest conservation organization. The Portland Audubon is the largest Audubon chapter in the nation. Their early advocacy led to establishment of national refuge areas in the state. Today there's 10 additional Audubon chapters throughout the state. The Riverkeeper organizations formed throughout the 90s, each with a watershed focus in their respective rivers. All of the organizations encourage civic involvement at all levels of government, rulemaking, permitting. They actively work to engage underrepresented communities. And additionally, they have a number of programs, education for all ages, public awareness, restoration projects, care of injured wildlife, recreation, Paddle Oregon, and a number of things that connect people directly to their nearby environment.
Audubon and the Riverkeepers advance Oregon's economic, environment, and social interests both directly and indirectly, directly with their own programs that lead to the protection of natural resources and collectively engage thousands of people who rack up thousands of hours of volunteer time. Quality of life is a competitive advantage that Oregon has over many other states, attracting business and individuals. The recreational values of our natural resources have already been mentioned. I think birders like fishers and hunters are known for the amount of money they're willing to spend on their hobbies. Clean water is our most precious resource, fundamental to our economy. Intel's already been mentioned, but I would like to mention that the Tualatin River is the source of Intel's water. We are reminded recently about how quickly costs can rack up when we let down our guard. A few years ago, an unregulated discharge led to a widespread outbreak of blue-green algae. Over the course of a month, the Joint Water Commission spent an additional $250,000 to filter the water. Some farmers experienced crop damage and recreation was significantly diminished. Historically and even now, environment and natural resource impacts have been externalized in economic equations. We've learned the hard way, I think, that the cost associated with restoration, mitigation, and cleanup efforts are quite expensive, and the public, sometimes for generations, are left picking up the tab. We would suggest that the committee in your deliberations take a precautionary approach, err on the side of protection, take the long-term view, look for opportunities to proactively protect resources. And we would encourage you to apply an equity lens. Many of the most impacted by the policy decisions have the least ability to weigh in on these decisions. Our interest in upcoming legislation would revolve around legislative efforts that protect natural resources, water, fish, wildlife, forests, and also protect the public's ability to participate and transparency in the process. I would echo adequate funding for natural resource agencies, and I'm heartened to hear some areas of commonality with the hunters and fishers related to energy siting, poaching, and Audubon is interested in habituation of wildlife that leads to conflicts. I would mention, just as a last note, that Rogue Riverkeeper in particular is interested in the suction dredge mining issue and its impacts that it's have on that river. There'll be a conversation in the Senate, which we hope will carry over into the House. But thank you very much for inviting this wide, diverse group to communicate with you at the outset of your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And Sue, while I'm not personally familiar with all of the riverkeepers, I have had the pleasure of seeing some of the projects undertaken by the Tualatin Riverkeepers.
Great.
And it is truly an impressive stewardship program that that those folks carry out. I think that if all of our tributaries in the state had that level of citizen involvement, we would be exceedingly well served as a state. Just outstanding job those folks conduct.
Great. Thank you. I'll pass those comments on.
Very good.
My name is Doug Moore. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. Thank you all for this opportunity to come before you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We appreciate that. The Oregon League of Conservation Voters has been around for a long time. I've encountered many of you in different opportunities to interact. We work to protect the natural legacy of Oregon and preserve our unique quality of life. One of the ways that we really work to do that is by passing environmental laws that protect those qualities that we care most about. We also coordinate the Oregon Conservation Network, which is a coalition of more than 40 conservation organizations that work together to pass those environmental laws here in Salem, in the capital. I want to save you lots of time and keep you under budget, so I appreciate that. I'm a big fan of efficiency. But one of the things that I do want to talk a little bit about here, our priorities this legislative session really focus on climate change and the importance of looking ahead and being proactive. With regard to that, we would like to see the Clean Fuels Program extended. We would like to see energy efficiency measures adopted, and we'd really like to take a close look at water and make sure that we're funding our agencies adequately. And I'd also like to expand on the comments with regard to suction dredge mining. I think this is an issue that hasn't been adequately studied. I think this is an issue that we really need to pay a lot of attention to. The activity on the river causes a lot of problems. I think the reference was it cleans the river. Well, that's not necessarily the case, and I think that this has a lot of impacts on the long term on our sport fishing industry and recreational economy in Southern Oregon, and it's something that our Southern Oregon members are very, very concerned about. I'd also like to point out that this has a lot of impacts on the health of the river as well as the species that populate those rivers. So, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so very, very much, Doug. I appreciate it.
Steve, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I get extra points for good timing. Just walk in this room as my name was
called.
I'm Stephen Kafouri. I represent a number of clients, two that I'm asked to talk about this morning, the Trust for Public Land and the Wildlife Society. The Wildlife Society is a national organization. I represent the Oregon chapter. We are wildlife biologists. Our membership comprises folks who are employed by ODF&W, by state and other state and federal agencies, and by private landowners. Folks like utilities and timber companies also need to have biologists on staff because so many decisions that are made regarding the uses of land have impacts on wildlife. We also have a number of folks who are in the private industry, independent contractors consult with people as an on-needed, as-needed basis. In the past, we have focused our legislative efforts at bringing science to the policymakers. We understand that when you make decisions, you make your decisions based on a vast variety of inputs of different kinds. And we respect that, and we understand that, that policy decisions are made on lots of different criteria. But we want to make sure that when you do make decisions that impact wildlife, you're basing those decisions on science. And so we stand here ready to bring you experts on any issue that you might want to be taking up. We rarely propose solutions. We often provide information. There is one thing that we're going to be doing this session. Let me just give you one quick example. Elk farming a few years ago was quite a controversial issue, whether people should privately be raising elks for food. And our folks brought in some information, some scientific information regarding the problems having to do with disease and from other states and the problems of keeping wildlife contained in small enclosures. We didn't suggest that the laws be changed ourselves, but we've made the information available so those decision makers had that when they were making that decision. One thing we will be talking about this session has to do with protection of wild birds. The federal government, as you may know, has a 10% excise tax on hunting and fishing equipment. That money is collected and sent out to the states on a population basis, and that money is used by agencies such as ODF&W to manage game animals and game birds. We have no funding in the state of Oregon except for a tiny, tiny bit of general fund money for non-game species. And those of us who realize that what's happening is we understand more and more about ecology is that what's good for game is good for non-game, and what's good for non-game is good for game in terms of understanding how ecologies work and how habitats work. To extent, we've been looking at giving some way that the hunters and fishers now have an opportunity to help fund what they are concerned about. We want to have a way for those people who are non-consumptive users of wildlife to also have a way to contribute. And we have a small tax on wild bird seed that we'll be introducing this session. That money would go towards protection of wild birds, which have been decreasing. All species have been decreasing across the state. And, okay, then the Trust for Public Land is a national organization. Again, I represent the local chapter. It was founded after the first Earth Day when a number of real estate professionals and lawyers who are involved in real estate got together as a way of professionalizing land conservation so that people knew what they were doing in a technical sense. We helped found the land trust organizations that you see a lot of around the country now. We also were pioneers in helping develop conservation easements so that ranchers and farmers and timber owners could maintain their occupations and their contributions to the local economies while still protecting the land. We have just outside of Salem, I'm sure Representative Clem is familiar with the Zena property, which is a large working forest that we protected. We work with state and local governments to finance these projects and then turn over the ownership to local or state government organizations. We have no bills this session.
All right. Thank you, each and every one of you, so very, very much. And Stephen, hopefully we can avail ourselves of the information that your biologists will have. We're going to have, I think, some need for some very reliable science here throughout our session.
Thank you.
Thank you all very, very much. With that, I'd like to call forward, please, Tom Wolf from Trout Unlimited, Sean Stevens from Oregon Wild, and Brian Pasco from the Sierra Club. Welcome to each of you.
Chair Witt, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'd like to start off just a little bit about myself. I am the sixth generation Oregonian who spent my youth following my football coach, teacher, father all across the state. We moved 9 times. We lived in towns such as Wallowa, Seaside, Pilot Rock, Astoria, Hood River. It was very, I got used to not knowing people very well because we would be moving shortly. But I grew up loving this state. I've seen all of it. I've been hunting and fishing since I was 5 years old and was taught to hunt and fish by one of my heroes, my grandfather Casey, who was also a logger for 53 years, starting in 1910 when he was 12. And I am down here doing this work that I've been doing for the last 20 years because shortly before he passed away, he asked me to fix, in his language, the mess that his generation had left and to restore streams and healthy forests to the levels that existed when he was a kid growing up at the turn of the century. And so I've taken that charge very seriously, and that's why I'm down here basically on my dime, putting in 60 to 70 hours a week working on these issues. As for Trout Unlimited, we are an organization with 3,000 members in the state, 150,000 across the nation. We are composed of fishermen who work on conservation issues. Some of the things we've been doing, there's lots of restoration works across the state. One area like to mention on the North Coast, we recently started a program last year where we collected Christmas trees in the Portland area, trucked them down to the Neconicum River to place them in off-site channel areas. We collected 800 last year. We've collected 2,000 this year. We've worked deals that we'll be able to do even more. And the head of that organization, Mike Orales, has been picked by Field and Stream magazine to be their conservation hero of the month for the April issue. So we're very proud of that, and we do sort of those sorts of things all across the state. As far as environmentally, we consider that protection of healthy watersheds, healthy wild native populations of trout and salmon, and healthy forests are very important for Oregonians, not only for our generation, but for future generations economically. In a report released by Dean Runyon,
commissioned by ODFW in 2009, it is noted that hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing brings in $2.5 billion a year to the state economy, both in money spent on restaurants and hotels, on equipment, and all sorts of miscellaneous items. It's very important. Second, economically, we view hatcheries, although they do provide fish, and we recognize that they'll always exist, they're very expensive. They're expensive to run, they're expensive to maintain, and eventually, because they're made out primarily out of concrete, they're going to break down and require a lot of money to fix. And we, our effort is to restore wild fish population to a level that people will be able to catch them and keep them. We're not looking to restore wild populations to showcase, but we believe that fishermen are just as important as a fish, and we want to protect those populations so that people can fish for them in the future. And thirdly, on the economic part, it's much cheaper to protect than to restore, both watersheds, water, and forests. Social values, we spend a lot of time teaching kids how to fish. That's one of the major components of that, because we're really alarmed for the fact that less and less people, less and less kids are hunting and fishing, and they're locked into computers and also and iPhones, and it's one of our duties to bring this up, because without fishers to protect the streams and rivers, there would be no protection. We are the people doing that protection. And then quickly on the bills we're going to be doing, I won't mention a lot of specific bills, but we're going to be looking at any bills that affect water, watershed health, fish, forest health. Specifically, just quickly mentioned SB 2396, which would mean that there would be large woody debris left in streams. SB 217, the water management fee, and also the bills that deal with section dredge mining. Lastly, what can this committee do for me? A real brief story. 38 years ago, I journeyed up to a tributary of the Tualatin River to go fly fishing for the first time and caught a beautiful cutthroat trout and released it. It was the first time I've caught and released a fish, first time I caught a fish on a fly. As I was going back, I stopped at a local store to buy food and gas and everything, and unfortunately that particular area, that stream has been mismanaged and no longer has fish, it no longer has a store, it no longer has a gas station. We believe our efforts, and we ask this committee that when you think of the bills that you're working on now, that the future of fishing and hunting and fish and wildlife in the state is directly determined by what decisions you're going to make. So we ask that when you're making decisions about important things like farming, use of water, and I recognize that all these are important. My family has been in farming and logging for a long time, but you also think about the future of fish, the future of water, the future of forest, and the future of fishermen. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Tom, and a nice tie, by the way. Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Krieger.
Your father was a Frank Wolf, was he?
Yes, that was my father.
Oh, my.
I've always been meaning to ask you if you knew him.
To come by. Or maybe he doesn't want to come by.
But folks will know, too, that in a previous life, Representative Krieger was involved in law enforcement. Not that that would have anything to do with the discussion. So
I see he's turning red in the face. So. May not have a job.
I've heard tell, too, that Representative Krieger had earned such a reputation. He used to be game enforcement in my neck of the woods that that people actually enjoyed it, thanked him for giving them tickets and citations.
That are beating.
So,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I was thinking we need to hear from Tom's grandfather in front of this committee, actually. Chair Webb, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sean Stevens. I live in Portland, and I'm the executive director of Oregon Wild. Oregon Wild is a statewide conservation organization. We've been around since 1974, working to protect and restore Oregon's wildlands, wildlife, and waters. For nearly four decades, we've worked to keep Oregon a special place by protecting the natural resources that Oregonians collectively own and that provide us with clean air, clean drinking water, habitat for native wildlife such as wild salmon and gray wolves, diverse recreation pursuits, global warming mitigation, and much more.
We've heard a lot of economic numbers today. I'll toss out one, that outdoor recreation and tourism bring in $5.8 billion to Oregon annually. And that's from all the things that we've heard about, from hunting to fishing to wildlife watching to camping and hiking, et cetera. Additionally, our public lands and our natural resources provide ecosystem services that are very hard to replace and very expensive to replace. And I think mentioning the economic numbers, we've heard a lot of them thrown around. Protecting Oregon's natural resources is also important because it's the moral and right thing to do, not just because it provides us with an economic backbone. For too long, political battles over the proper use and preservation of Oregon's natural resources have centered on conflict and controversy. Conservationists and resource extraction industries are very unlikely to agree on everything, but in recent years we've found common ground on many issues. Twice in the past 5 years, Oregon Wild has been the recipient of the National Two Chiefs Award from the Forest Service and the National Resources Conservation Service. The award recognizes the work of Oregon Wild and dozens of other groups and individuals to find common ground over restoration-based management in these two cases on the Sayula National Forest and the Mount Hood National Forest. These collaborative forest restoration efforts help us to find shared solutions to forest management problems that help to restore the forest but also provide jobs. And I would recommend that this committee look at common ground solutions like that that can achieve dual goals that help to protect our natural resources and grow sustainable jobs. During the session, we will focus on a couple of things. It's been mentioned, but addressing the growing problem of suction dredge mining in Oregon's scenic and salmon-rich rivers is a very important issue for us, as is ensuring that management rules governing Oregon's gray wolves and the recovering population, that those management rules are not weakened or undermined by proposals that would make it easier to kill this still endangered species. I'll keep it short and wrap it up there. And Oregon's natural resources define our state. I appreciate the opportunity to speak for you, and I look forward to working with you to ensure that we protect the Oregon that we love.
Sean, thank you very, very much. A very powerful statement and said in a very concise manner. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I will try to be brief as well. For the record, my name is Brian Pascoe. I'm the director of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club, and I am a new face to many of you, so I guess I will briefly share a little bit of my personal story, which begins with a confession that I am one of the few recovering lawyers in this building. I graduated from Lewis and Clark Law School back when it was the Northwestern School of Law. I litigated Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act cases in the Midwest for a number of years. Lobbied for the Sierra Club in Minnesota for about 5 years before finally making it back to God's country here, and where I became the director, the first director of the state director of the Sierra Club here in Oregon in 2008. I guess on a personal, in a personal affiliation, I am also a planning commissioner on the Clackamas County Planning Commission. So, you know, I have a real vested interest in good government that goes beyond my work with the Sierra Club. But I am a new face in this building, and I really appreciate all of your gracious patience as I've begun to get to know a number of you and have been learning how some things work in this building. And for those of you I haven't met yet, I really look forward to meeting and working with you. So thank you so much. I think many of you know that the Sierra Club is both a statewide and a national organization with the mission of exploring, enjoying, and protecting our environment and natural resources. So we have a very broad mission. We have about 700,000 members nationally, about 20,000 members here in Oregon. I think we are different from most of the other conservation organizations that you work with because we are very much a grassroots democracy. At any point in time, I have hundreds of volunteers who are actively engaged in developing our policy positions and the strategies that we work on here in Oregon. And so we have a very small number of staff, and our role is to help those volunteers move the policies they care about. Right now, our staff consists of myself and a part-time administrative assistant. We have a couple of national staff here in Oregon that are working on some issues that probably won't make their way into this building, and I hope to have a new conservation Conservation Director on next week, so that you might be seeing from him as well. We'll try not to repeat a lot of what has been said. I think there will be plenty of time to talk about specific bills down the road. I will just mention two areas that our organization works with that I think most directly relates to the work of this committee, which is around forests and wildlife. And specifically, you know, I'll throw out two myths that I think are dispelled about our, you know, put out about our organization that I'd like to kind of put on the table. One is that there's a common belief that the Sierra Club is opposed to all logging on our public lands, and the second is that this kind of feeling that we are an animal rights anti-hunting organization. And just very briefly on the logging issues, I certainly know that we're strapped for time. I'll finish up quickly on the logging issues. We certainly feel that there is a time and place for logging in our public lands. And to oversimplify a very complex issue, I think we do, in fact, have really serious concerns about large-scale clear-cutting deep and remote core habitat areas in our forests. But at the same time, I think we really genuinely see an economic and environmental opportunity to do good, sustainable logging and thinning, particularly in areas where forests interface with communities. And we have been very active particularly in Central Oregon, working with some collaborative projects to make good projects move forward that can benefit both loggers and the environment. And happy to talk to all of you more about that. On the animal rights side, I will say that I have members who are live and die for the hunting season every year. I have members on the other side who would like us to move a constitutional amendment to keep us from stepping on ants. Very broad group of folks. At the end of the day, we don't have a position on hunting, other than the fact that I think that we all recognize that hunting is a long-standing important cultural tradition in our state and in our country, and that our hope is that as we make wildlife management decisions in the state, that they're based on good science and designed to keep the viability of species, particularly large predators in the state. So I will just wrap up by saying, discussing one thing that I think the committee might be helpful on moving forward, and that is to say that I have a tremendous amount of respect for our state forester, Doug Decker, and I'm really excited about the new board of forestry chair. I don't always agree with those guys, but we have a great give and take. I think they are very committed to good, transparent processes and into engaging stakeholders across the board. And my hope is that the legislature will give as much room as possible for those folks to do really good work and to engage stakeholders in a process that probably allows more time for discussion than maybe this short legislative session does. So with that, I will say that I'm very excited that Representative Whitsett will be as late to our 9:30 meeting as I will be. And thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you all very, very much. Certainly appreciate your comments and look forward to your guidance here during the session. Thank you again very much. And with that, I'm going to call up our final couple of witnesses, Paul Engelmeyer from 10 Mile Creek Sanctuary and John DeVoe from Water Watch. Good morning and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name for the record is John DeVoe. I'm the Executive Director of Water Watch of Oregon. Water Watch was founded in 1985. It's a nonprofit river conservation group dedicated to the protection and restoration of natural stream flows in Oregon's rivers. We work to ensure there's enough water in Oregon's rivers to sustain fish, wildlife, recreation, and other public uses of our waters. We also work for balanced water laws and policies. We have supporters across Oregon who care deeply about our rivers, their inhabitants, and the effects of water laws and policies on these resources. An interesting fact is that we have more members in the second congressional district in Oregon than in any of the other congressional districts. The constituencies that benefit from our work include commercial and recreational fishing interests, river-dependent businesses, conservationists, watershed councils, tribal interests, elements of the tourism economy, wildlife interests, and those who recreate in and around our rivers. Our work also benefits water users who care about balanced water policy, agency accountability, and the state's water future. On the environmental side, Water Watch has been a major part of almost every significant in-stream water policy in Oregon for the past quarter century. During that time, we've drafted and secured passage of landmark laws such as Oregon's In-Stream Water Rights Act and the Conserved Water Act. To the extent Oregon does water measurement, considers water availability, has standards to protect imperiled fish and accommodate growth, those directly result from our work. We've removed major dams on the Rogue River, restored stream flows to dewatered streams across the state, and because Oregon leads the western states in stream flow protection and restoration as a direct result of our work. But there's a lot more to do. On the economic and social sides, you've heard a lot about the economic value that irrigated agriculture brings to Oregon. You've also heard a little bit about some of the economic value that healthy rivers and balanced water policies bring. As the Dean Runyon ODFW report documents that Kurt Melcher and Tom Wolf referenced, there are hundreds of millions of dollars brought annually to rural Oregon in particular as a result of travel-related expenditures and purchases of specialized equipment to use in hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing. A PCFFA report found that salmon declines in the Columbia River Basin alone have cost that region's fishing economy as much as 25,000 family wage jobs and $500 million a year in lost wages for each and every year those declines in fisheries on that river basin are allowed to continue. And this past year, 1,100 businesses in the Pacific Northwest signed a joint letter to the Obama administration in support of Columbia salmon restoration. And the message was, a healthy salmon fishery is good business. Expanding a little bit on the ODFW report, in 2008, over 631,000 people participated in freshwater fishing across Oregon. There were over 1.7 million trips for trout, 900,000 trips for salmon, 953,000 trips for steelhead, and there were also approximately 1.7 million wildlife viewers who took over 5.5 million birdwatching trips in the state. It's clear that many of these trips involve species that rely on adequate water at the right time of year for some or all of their life cycles. We've already lost 106 runs of anadromous fish in the Columbia Basin alone. It's been estimated that 214 additional runs of anadromous fish in the Pacific Northwest are at risk. The upshot is that thousands of jobs across the state in accommodations, food and beverage services, food stores, retail, ground transportation, outfit, guide, charter businesses, entertainment, and the specialized equipment sectors of the economy benefit from balanced water policies that this legislature can create. From a social perspective, it's also clear that hundreds of thousands of Oregonians from all walks of life, from a broad spectrum of ethnicities, ages, income levels, and party affiliations, participate in fishing, wildlife viewing, and hunting, and that these activities depend on the presence of healthy freshwater habitat in Oregon. The benefits of these activities are incalculable. The quality of life benefits that they bring to Oregon are a competitive advantage for our state, and they make Oregon a wonderful place to live, work, and raise a family. The one thing I would ask this committee to take into account this session is to consider the economic value and the contributions to Oregon's quality of life that result from balanced water policies that produce healthy rivers and fish. If you have that overlay on all the bills you consider, those interests will get a fair shake and the state will be okay. Some of the bills we're interested in this session are Senate Bill 217, which would provide a sustainable funding stream for the Water Resources Department, a bill that would close a loophole on water right transfers, Senate Bill 425, and the Scenic Waterway Bill that's been mentioned, Senate Bill 401. We also will be working to ensure that any proposed water development program is balanced, protective of stream flows, and does not roll back existing standards that benefit rivers and fish. I appreciate your time today and look forward to working with you this session. Thank you very much.
John, thank you very, very much. I appreciate your comments. Paul?
Thank you. If Thank you for this opportunity to speak to the committee today. My name is Paul Engelmeyer, and I live just south of Yahats on the coast. I'm involved in a diversity of natural resource conservation issues, primarily in the Central Coast. I wanted to introduce myself to you and see how I can support your committee's work and offer myself as an informational resource to you if that would be of assistance. My perspective comes from wearing a number of conservation hats and working collaborative partnerships with federal, state, and nonprofit organizations. I represent multiple conservation organizations, Audubon Society of Portland, the Native Fish Society, and Wetlands Conservancy. I've managed lands for Wetlands Conservancy and Audubon Society for over 20 years. And I've worked with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Parks and Recreation, Sayula National Forest, the Watershed Council on watershed education and restoration activities. These activities deal with recovery strategies for multiple species, including coho salmon, of course, and the marbled murrelet. I've worked with the Wetlands Conservancy on state and federal agencies on identification and acquisition of lands that conserve these lands for biodiversity and other functional values, specifically water quality, dealing with flooding issues. I deal with education and the overall community quality of life. My work with the Native Fish Society is one of policy, but also I am on the River Stewards Program, helping to advance watershed restoration. My collaborative work involves working with groups that realize that despite our diverse perspectives, have many common goals, such as habitat protection that will recover species in trouble and avoid stricter regulations. Restore measures that assure strong populations of fish that support recreational commercial fishing, and restoration work that stimulates local economy by helping ensure there's work in the woods and in the ocean for forest and fishing fishermen. And of course, the Runyon Report has been cited a number of times, which I agree 100%. I mean, it's clearly the Surfrider Report, which is brought together for the Territorial Sea Plan, mirrors that same result. There are millions of visits to the coast. They're dependent on natural resource-focused activities, and it generates over $2.5 million a year, dealing with wildlife viewing, as well as fishing and hunting. So one of the other things I've dealt with is this Ocean Policy Advisory Council. And I'm proud to say that our local community team process involved a broad diversity of users, and we came up with a 15-to-1 in favor vote for the Aceta Perpetual Marine Reserve Marine Protected Area that surrounds Yahats area. So I truly appreciate this opportunity to come before the committee today, and I look forward to an interesting and productive session. Finally, I have distributed the Wetlands Conservancy publication, Heroic Tales, for each of the committee members to showcase the stories and strategies of creative solutions and partnerships that rural Oregonians, many farmers and ranchers, have used to conserve Oregon's wetlands. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you so very, very much for your statements. Greatly appreciated. And please feel free to come back and visit with us throughout the session. With that, an announcement of the bills that are up on Tuesday. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there will be a public hearing on House Bill 2700, which is the Aggie Bonds Bill, and then a public hearing and possible work session on three bills from the Department of Ag, one dealing with grain, another with onions, transportation of onions, and the third with prunes.
Thank you very, very much. I would just want to thank all of our witnesses today and remind everyone of the billions and billions of dollars that the traded sector in our natural resources bring from other states back home here to Oregon. And thank you all for your love and protection of our state's natural resources. With that, we stand adjourned.